I do. You're ripping me off, and I didn't deserve it because I didn't do nothing wrong. Your buddy set that pipeline drive right. That fuck gets someone in the 40 miles or whatever it is. I never saw the sign. I saw it 55, and I was doing 57. That's all I know. Now just give me the damn thing, and I'll look at the date. If I'm working, I'll pay the fine because I can't afford to take a day off. And if I'm not working, I'll plead not guilty because I know well I'm not guilty. There. Now, are you state or local? Looks like you're a state trooper. Get back to pick up some more guys and run up the deficit on working in. Just give me the damn thing. Let me get out of here.
What I need you to do is sound the X so I can explain this to you.
There ain't no explaining. I got picked up for speeding before. You're guilty and you paid the fine and hope your insurance don't go up. And you try not to speed the next time. That's what I've been trying to do for 4 or 5 years, and it's worth damn good. Do I run into you? You are.
Green copy's for your record, sir.
I don't. All right.
White copy needs to be mailed in within 20 days.
Okay.
Read the back of this hard copy. This will explain how you can have a trial if you want to. On the back, that will explain it. Attach is an envelope. See? Put a stamp on that, you mail that in. They'll tell you what to do.
Yeah, I can afford the stamp.
The fine's right here, sir. It's $137.50.
You're raging! I get it! You're raging! My wife took money out of her damn account where she's working to pay my insurance so I wouldn't get picked up by. You're raging!
If you don't pick this up, sir, I'm going to summon you for littering.
I'll pick the are you raging? I won't give it me, did you $107? Right.
There's some more right there.
I've never heard of a woman like that in my life, you
it. There you go, cop versus the working man. How about that? Terrible Tommy here in the bunker right here in North Central Indiana, right by Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern and Steakhouse and Filling Station. And that's right by our weapons of mass destruction used equipment yard. We've got them all over the place here, bringing them in from everywhere. Almost not used, all this expenditure on weapons. Wow. So the waste by the military-industrial complex can be your riches. Yeah, you can buy any one of those great big weapons, hardly used, right out here at our weapons of mass destruction used equipment yard. But it's getting colder now, and when it gets, end of November, I'm afraid we'll be closing up for the winter. I'll take my vacation at that my island out there in the Pacific. Well, it is the 11th month, November, turkey time almost, and it's the first day, so you got quite a bit of time to get it done. If you're itching to do something, you can get it done in the month of November. You know, we got such a scary neighborhood around here that the ghosts and goblins never even come to our house. Oh, not one trick-or-treater. I don't think it's because I'm such a scary guy, but the sad part of it, there's less and less white kids around. But there is some silver lining. I see in New York City there's more blacks being aborted than not. I mean, they're boarding them as fast as they get popped out there. So that's what I like about Christian rights. I'm not crying like the Christians and like a lot of right-wingers do. If you're white and if you don't have enough brains to save your kid, well, you don't have enough brains to participate. That's right. Even with massive abortion, it's not going to save the day for the white race. Because they're coming on strong, man. They're popping them out by the dozens. All over this country, all over the world. And then what they don't pop out naturally. They bring them in from the Middle East and all over the sub-Saharan Africa, flooding the cities of Europe, and they're flooding the cities of the United States. You can't save people like that. You can't help people, white people like that, if they're so stupid as to be killing off their future. And that's what they're doing. They're killing off their future. And then the corporations can say, well, we had to bring them all in here because there were no workers. We had to. Yeah. That's the kind of argument they use. And they keep talking about, we're a nation of immigrants. Yeah. Immigration was supported and pushed, of course, by corporate powers all the way back. And even though you can say we got a lot of good people immigrated here in the 1800s, we got a lot of bad people immigrated here in the 1800s. Remember the Black Hand, Cosa Nostra, and all that kind of stuff? So immigration is not always what it's tacked up to be. Unless you're extremely discriminatory when you let people in. You can't just leave them in by the boatloads like we used to do and like we're still doing. Well, the Trumpites are happy. They think they're going to have a win here. It's possible. But it's too close. It'll be on the popular vote if he wins, but then he won't get by the Electoral College. That's this fail-safe, just like the Supreme Court is the fail-safe to protect the government from the people. The Electoral College, these things were all put together by the ruling class as stopgap operations to keep the people's popular will from being carried out. Why do you think they give these operations like the Electoral College such sweet-sounding names? What do you mean, Electoral College? Where do you sign up to be in the college? Well, you sign up by being some of the hot shots of your political party, some of the ruling class members of the political parties, and then you get in there and the big boys tell you what they want, and you say, okay, I'm going to vote against Trump because he's a populist. He's a popular guy. So you wait and see. I've been wrong before, and I'll be wrong again, but I don't think I'm wrong this time. Of course, they'll come out and say, well, he did such a come-from-behind job, did a great job, and the American democratic ideals were played out, and it was fair and square, but he lost. And it's the American way. That's the American way. And the American way is obey the ruling class. Obey the ruling class. Keep your nose clean. You'll be okay. Well, it says here, Catholics, the ultimate swing voters, lean heavily towards Hillary Clinton. Catholics favor Clinton over Trump 51-40%. According to the recent survey from the Public Religion Research Institute, whoever the hell that is. You may think you're escaping the power of the Jews going with Donald Trump, but Donald has made a little prayer. He wrote a little prayer, quote, may you bless the United States, our armed forces, and our allies. May your guiding hand protect and strengthen our great nation, unquote. The GOP presidential candidate's prayer said. And you know where he put the prayer? He put the prayer, you're not going to believe this. He wrote the prayer for the Western Wall in Israel. Do you ever notice the way he holds his hands when he's making a point? His arms spread wide and his palms up. If you've ever dealt with Jews, like in big cities and business, that's the way they talk. I seen, you know, I used to work for a couple of Jews, and when they're trying to make a point, they put those uplifted hands out there, spread apart. It's a gesture that I always recognize as being pretty Jewish. And Donald Trump does it all the time. Well, I see the Papa, the Pope, names a Detroit bishop to Guam Archdiocese rocked by sex abuse allegations. Detroit Auxiliary Bishop Michael J. Burns has been appointed by Pope Francis to replace an embattled archbishop accused of sexually abusing altar boys. Dateline Jerusalem, a 27-year-old piece of papyrus bearing what Israeli archaeologists said is the earliest known non-biblical reference to Jerusalem, could be a fake, the scholars have charged, citing the document's unverifiable origins. The document, which a team from the Israeli Antiquities Authorities unveiled at a Wednesday news conference, bears the words, quote, from the king's maidservant, from Naratat, jars of wine, to Jerusalem, unquote. It was discovered 4 years ago in the possession of antiquities thieves. The authorities said it traced back to the site in the Judean desert based on thieves' testimony and other information, which is unreliable. One thing I've got to say that might not put me in too good a stead with the Hollywood Nazis is the fact that I've watched these Israeli archaeologists, and they tend to be pretty accurate, and they tend not to be really religiously oriented. They seem to be secular, and I've seen them do quite a bit of good work, and so now you can say I'm a Jew lover. But you know me, I calls them the way I sees them, whether people like it or not. Israeli archaeologists have poo-pooed a whole bunch of the Bible, as far as all these crazy-ass things that the Bible promotes, and so-called miracles, and people rising from the dead, and people jump into a whale's mouth, and all that kind of stuff. They've done a good job at that. I didn't read the whole thing. The papyrus is significant because it presents rare non-biblical evidence of the existence of a kingdom in Judea. Although the authorities, archaeologists said carbon-14 dating proved that the papyrus is from the First Temple period, and an epigraphic examination found that the lettering is consistent with 7th century BC writing, Aaron Meyer, an archaeologist at Bar Alam University, told attendees at the Archaeology of Jerusalem and its region conference on Thursday that the document's origins cannot be verified. Quote, how do we know it isn't a forgery intended by For Antiquities Market? Unquote, asked Meyer, who was not involved in the papyrus acquisition or analysis. Quote, after all, there are well-known cases in which writing was forged on an ancient platform. It's very possible that only the papyrus itself is ancient and not what the wording on it. In archaeology, much more weight is given to an object's authenticity if it is dug up from an undisturbed excavation than if it's found elsewhere. Amir Gainer, director of the IAA's Robbery Prevention Unit, said he and his colleagues, including well-known biblical scholar Shmuel Atuv, quote, tried in every possible way to check the papyrus. We used the methods used to check the Dead Sea Scrolls, which were also made mostly fake. If someone has an additional method, he's invited to apply it. We as a country were obligated to get our hands on this, and I'm certain it's authentic, unquote. You got to keep the party line going there, boy. Well, the far right, whatever that means, leader Wilders fails to show up at the Dutch hate crime trial. Far right leader accused of inciting hatred against Netherlands Moroccan community. How about that? instead taking to the social media to denounce what he said was an attack on freedom of expression. Mr. Wilders, whose Party for Freedom, PVV, led opinion polls in the Netherlands for much of the past year, is accused of inciting hatred against the country's small Moroccan community with comments he made after municipal elections 2 years ago. Well, deport those bastards immediately. A Moroccan. His trial comes just 4 months before what will be a close-watch general election in the Netherlands, that being seen as a bellwether for the strength of the populist anti-immigrant parties, ahead of the polls in France and Germany later in 2017. Support for Mr. Wilder's strongly anti-Islamic PVV has fallen back in recent months, but he is still polling in second place. I guess they have to have a bombing every couple of weeks to keep that fervor up. So, come on, ISIS, get busy. The charges against the party leader center on comments he made at a rally in 2014 in which he asked supporters whether they wanted more or fewer Moroccans in Netherlands. When the assembled crowd responded that they wanted fewer, he replied that he would take care of the issue. Oh, that's horrible, what he said there. Well, I would go out in front of my house and yell at anybody going by that I want fewer Moroccans. We got them in this country, too. Monday's no-show at the court in Schiphol meant it was left to Mr. Wilder's lawyer to read out a statement denouncing the trial as a politically motivated travesty and labeling the Netherlands as a dictatorship. Well, it sure is. When you're persecuting your own people, it's time to remove the government. The politician also wrote on social media website Twitter that his country has a huge problem with Moroccans and that Islam is the real hate speech. You got it right there, Mr. Wilders, and I wish you good success. In fact, I wish you terrific success. All this suppressing free speech is simply stoking the fires. The more they do that, the more radicals will come out against it. So in some ways, the system and the ruling class do us a favor by persecuting good people. Sorry, boys and girls, I'm trying to catch up here.
Is using it as a lesson. Racism, unfortunately, still exists. Our Cole Miller joins us now with more on that. What did you find out, Cole?
Well, Jeff, Jennifer, a lot of people are wondering how and why someone could do such a thing, targeting those places of worship. And as awful as this is, like you said, one pastor is planning on using this to teach his community.
It was very disheartening. Very disgusting. I certainly felt disgusted having seen it.
They are images and words we have seen too many times before. They are images and words of hate.
Very unfortunate.
Father Brian Oakes.
You know, around here, this type of behavior, it happens. You know, I mean, you hear of it happening.
Right.
Of course, this one hit close to home for us. But
home for Father Oakes and many others is the St. Rose Catholic Church in Longview. This morning, staff arrived to find those swastikas and racist words spray-painted on church doors and even a car. And just across Lake Sacagawea on Washington Way, Trinity Lutheran Church also dealing with a similar mess.
We're going to use this as an opportunity to reaffirm our values as a church. We're going to use this as an opportunity to teach our children in our parish school about racism.
Father Oakes now seeing this as a platform to make change, to remind those coming through these doors, a world without hate is possible. It's just up to us to make that happen.
There is a better way to live, much more peaceful, fulfilling way to live that doesn't involve racism or any other type of prejudice.
To see if they could tell me anything more from an investigation standpoint, but I did not hear back. If I do, I'll be sure to let you know. Back to you.
Well, I'd like to inform the pastor, and pastor is a funny funny name. Anyhow, no matter how objectionable the symbols, Aryan symbols, were to many people painted on the church, it's not these symbols that's causing problems in society. It's what's being taught in the church. They talk about hatred. There's no more hatred that's ever been than comes out of churches and religion. Millions and millions and millions of people die because of religion. And don't say it's don't blame the religion. You got to blame the religion. So if you want to compare the hatred of race to the hatred of religion in the churches, they don't even come together at all. Millions of people in Europe were butchered by the Catholic Church, and millions of people still are killed all over the world because of religion. So, Mr. Pastor Man, you're going to do away with hatred, start inside your church, and I can find a Bible that you've got in your church that you go by as the Word of God to be a hateful, hateful book. It's filled with hatred from beginning to end and should not be allowed in the hands of young children before they're, say, 18 years old. It's obscene. The Bible's full of obscenities and genocide and everything else. So for a church and a preacher to point their finger at a few Aryan symbols that some person put on the church as a big major thing that we got to stamp out is ludicrous. There's no comparison. Absolutely no comparison. Montgomery County Police in Maryland are describing vandalism at a Bethesda school as hate-based. It is the second incident over the last few weeks in the area. Of course, most of the hatred is engendered in the teaching in the school, and how you must go off to war to defend your country by murdering people all over the world. The reason young people are beginning to hate schools is because they know they've been betrayed in the schools, and the schools lie to them, tell them to be patriotic to a corrupt system. Anyhow, it says everything was cleaned by Tuesday morning at the Burning Tree Elementary School, where vandalism was discovered Sunday morning. It says here also, a Jewish congregation holds weekly services at the school. Well, that doesn't mean that they were out after the Jews at all. Just but could be. Images of swastikas and male genitalia, you mean dicks, were found by members sprayed painted on a banner near the entrance. Well, at least they get a lesson in biology. 2 weeks ago, almost identical images were discovered at the Quince Orchard High School about 15 miles away. In that case, the images were burned into the football field. See, young people are beginning to realize what they're being lied to about in education. They're beginning to hate being propagandized and realize that they're going nowhere in the job market, too. Investigators did release surveillance pictures of a suspicious dark-colored four-door sedan leaving the school on October 13. Good luck on that. The photo isn't very clear, but it does show the left headlight brighter than the other. Well, that's a dead giveaway. Police have been in contact with the Jewish Community Relations Council and the Jewish Federation and are taking the matter seriously, even offering up to $10,000 to anyone who will rat on who did it. Now, wait a minute. The Jews only use this school once a week, and the attack was on the school as a whole. Now, how come the Jews get special consideration, even up to a $10,000 reward? I think some people back there, maybe some of the kids, should start calling in and claiming that reward. And just start telling them, some of the city fathers, and all the popular city fathers were involved into it. You could raise hell that way, too. It's funny. Have you noticed about how many people are killed in school buses and trains and commercial buses? Did you ever check them out and see what the drivers were, what the engineers were, and so forth? I have seen nothing about the results of the investigation of that train wreck on the East Coast a couple, 3 months ago. Here's a story of 6 killed in school bus, MTA bus crash in Baltimore. I'll bet you, and you can call me racist if you want to, I'll bet you in most of these cases you're dealing with black drivers and different races driving, and even white drug impaired people driving these buses and these trains. They tend not to show you the race, but check it out. Check this one out in Baltimore. What was the driver? Was he white? Chances are he wasn't. You know why they hire these blacks to drive the buses? Because they get them cheap. They get them cheaper, non-union jobs. And that's what happens with a lot of these terrible situations in society. The ruling class don't want to pay decent wages, so they get crummy help. Crummy cops, crummy firemen, crummy bus drivers, you name it. Check it out. Security guards. Security guards are a joke. They're a sad joke, sick joke. Security guards aren't security guards at all. They're just door rattlers, door shakers. Yeah. If you want security, you got to pay for it. And you got to pay top money for good security. But what the hell? It's only your kids in a school bus. Who gives a shit, right? So if you're riding the MTA or whatever it is to work in New York City and places like that, or if your kids are riding in these school buses, it's your duty to find out who's driving these buses that have your kids in it. And the train engineers and so forth that are driving these 100-mile-an-hour trains into brick walls. Yeah, that's your duty, your responsibility. Well, this is interesting. In Oxon Hill, Maryland, an 84-year-old scientist and inventor was killed in a house fire last week in Oxon Hill, Maryland. George W. Nafflet was found by firefighters on the home's first floor. Nafflet was a renowned African-American chemist and inventor, according to the Washington Post. A woman in her 80s was able to get out of the home and had non-life-threatening injuries. She was taken into an area hospital. The fire occurred in the 6700 block of Belfast Place. According to fire officials, Nafflet's death is the 7th residential fire fatality for 2016 in Prince George County. Several hours later, fire officials said another incident took place in Landover, Maryland, resulting in the 8th fire-related fatality of the year. I always notice and give attention to these kind of articles because it may be nothing, but it may be something. He might have been a target of a racist, I don't know. But, says here, he was a chemist and an inventor. Now, he may have come, guys like that, come up with something every once in a while that's earth-shaking. So, and what would be a reason for killing him off to keep him quiet and keep his research quiet? Yeah, that's sort of off the wall, but I'm a skeptic and I look into this kind of stuff with interest. Well, here's a woman that's accused of committing a hate crime. Catherine Tudor. A Peterborough woman is accused of saying derogatory names while assaulting a man. Well, there are thousands of derogatory names. And assaulting, Maybe she just tried to slap the guy. According to Peterborough police, at about 2:45 a.m. on October 30th, the man was attempting to leave a George Street North parking lot in his vehicle when he was approached by a woman crossing the exit to the parking lot. Police said the woman stood in front of his vehicle, preventing him from driving away. Well, he could have run over her. When the man asked the woman to move, the police said she allegedly hit in the face, assaulting his vehicle and uttering derogatory names like bad driver. The incident was later reported to police, and the woman was arrested at the Almer Street address. This incident has been classified as a hate bias crime. She probably called him a shitty driver. A hate bias crime is described as a criminal offense committed against a person or property which is motivated by the suspect offender's hate bias against the racial, religious, ethnic, sexual orientation, or disability group. Catherine Tudor, 25, of Almer Street North, is charged with the assault and mischief under $5,000. Well, I wonder if she was black or she was white. They don't say it here, so she must have been black. She just got all mad at that guy. That white man wanted to go by me, and I'm occupying this space myself. Get out of here, you white honky son of a bitch. You committed a hate crime, baby. Of course, you realize they get big headlines on this stuff, but most people plead out in these cases and are not, they don't follow through with the hate crime thing. Most people. Here in Indiana, we don't even have a hate crime law. How about that? I can go around and do all kinds of stuff. Here's what I'd call a hate crime. A drunk man tosses firecrackers from his car at a child. Now, to me, that is hate. Hey, did you dress up and go out last night trick-or-treating? I thought about dressing up and doing something screwy, but I decided, to hell with it. I was too lazy to get into the picture. So I stayed at home. And usually every year there's something goes on outside the house. Somebody threw a pumpkin on Halloween a couple of years ago. And we've had a couple of things, a couple of windows broken on a vehicle, but nothing serious. And last night, for the first time, nothing happened. I'm beginning to worry. My reputation's wearing down. Well, here's a story from my old almost alma mater, San Diego, California. Three arrested in alleged hate crime attack on a Muslim man at the San Diego restaurant. Three men were arrested on suspicion of committing a hate crime in connection with the attack on a Somali man in San Diego's Redwood Village neighborhood over the weekend. Officers were called to Zappy Pizza in the 5900 block of University Avenue Sunday shortly after 3:30. According to Officer Dino Dilimitros, the altercation began when three white men made degrading comments about a group of nigger Somalis based on their race and religion. Wow. They'll never be able to live that down. The argument turned violent when the 20-year-old Somali man was struck in the face with a pair of brass knuckles. That's my boys. That's my guys. San Diego's a rough place. He was also struck in the back of the head with a chair, Delamitro said. The victim suffers cuts and bruises to his black face but refused medical treatment. That's because he's illegal, probably. He's here on a student visa. The three suspects and these three white guys were just trying to apprehend a person who was in the country illegally. They should be given a commendation. Delamitro's, the three suspects were taken into custody nearby after being identified by witnesses, and probably all white people too. White Republicans turn them in. Delamitro said, wow. You realize how much this is costing the taxpayers? Do you realize? Do you realize how much all this hate crime shit is costing the taxpayers? Well, you know, everybody can be at the poorhouse at the same time, I guess. No wonder you can't fix your streets or build your schools or anything like that. You're spending all your money chasing around people who give people bloody noses and hit them over the head with chairs. Yeah, the cops are chasing all these people for these so-called hate crimes, though. What about those guys that are dropping bombs on schools over in Iraq, killing dozens of kids? What about those guys? What about the drones dropping shit all over the Middle East and nuclear waste all over the Middle East? What about that? Oh, we got to go after this hate crime shit. These guys are crazy, especially the white ones. They're real crazy. We ain't got time for stopping all this bullshit in the Middle East, bringing everybody home and telling them to go do whatever they can do. We got to do like this. The suspect in a hate crime arrest at Farmer Boys last week will appear in court Tuesday. Richard Martinez Mendoza, wait a minute, 22, walked in to Farmer's Boys at Haley Street in East Bakersfield and demanded a free Gatorade from an employee. Now, this guy's a Mexican, a mestizo, so see how this hate crime shit has turned around to bite him in the ass? I love it. When the employee refused, the suspect picked up a chair and hit the employee while yelling a racial slur. I'll bet the employee was black. You goddamn nigger, give me that Gatorade. Oh, I kick your ass. He then started punching the victim, who is said to be female. Oh, that's not right. The suspect was charged with assault with a deadly weapon, violating civil rights by force. Well, that's a new one. And vandalism damage. The victim received minor injuries. Mendoza is being held on $30,000 bail. The entire Mexican community of the town turned out to demonstrate to let him out. No, I didn't say they didn't do that. But they would if they could, if they'd heard about it. Well, one of our good buddies out there asked me to dedicate some words to George Lincoln Rockwell, which I will, reading from his great book, No, Not White Power. This time, The World is the book you need to read if you want to know about George Lincoln Rockwell. If you've got one of these books, you know, keep it safe, because there are not many of them around. They may have reprinted it, but I'm not sure about that. But if you want to know about George Lincoln Rockwell, that's the book to read. This time, The World. I'm going to read from his position on religion, which might surprise some of you people. Until then, I had been highly religious. I had often put my allowance in the collection plate as a boy and felt a great surge of joy in doing so, imagining the warm smile of a personal God as I made the sacrifice. But now I began to wonder at the mounting evil I was discovering in the world and the illogical explanations for it in my Christian religion. I read and reread the Bible as I had not done before from beginning to end. I was appalled at the demand by God for human sacrifice, for eating human flesh waste by the Lord, for the horrible cruelties and atrocities demanded by the Lord, according to the Old Testament, by the doctrine that the Lord made millions of people to be slaves for the Hebrews, whom he had chosen through no merit of their own, while he destroyed his other creatures wholesale for the Hebrews' special pleasure, and promised them that they would be able to put their feet on the necks of all other peoples. I wondered that the preachers had never preached from these other peoples. I wonder that the preachers had never preached from these vicious or repulsive verses. Were they not aware that such monstrosities were in the Bible, as I had been unaware? Or did they know and falsely skip over them just to stay in business? Could I believe that a God who glorified such vicious and bloody revenge was a God of love? Why all the explanations? It was plain to read on page after page. The Lord had created two innocent creatures out of nothing, placed them in the garden, knowing that they were too imperfectly made and too weak to resist temptation, and unless his foreknowledge was wrong, which was impossible, knowing they would fall to temptation and to be condemned along with their innocent children to eternal misery. And then this loving Father had placed the most irresistible temptation loaded with unheard-of poison before his children. I imagined what I would have thought of my feeble human father if he had placed us kids in a garden and then hung ice cream cones and lollipops and toys all around, warning us not to touch these irresistible delights, and then put inconceivable deadly poison in all these temptations, knowing all the time with certainty that we would be poisoned and fiendishly tortured forever. Most of all, I wondered at the idea that if there were a few simple ideas, and facts to be understood to enjoy eternal life and happiness here and later on, and God were all-powerful, he had made it impossible for me to believe those ideas and facts because of the very mind which he gave me. And then I am to be threatened with eternal damnation for not believing that which I cannot believe? My first reaction was atheism. I did something I deeply regret and shall never do again. I had begun to discover my own power of persuasion, and in the internal bull sessions of a boys' school, religion is not exempt as a topic. I was genuinely sorry that I had lost my belief in Christianity, for it has truly marvelous power to sustain and help one in times of tribulation. I began to discuss the matter with a devout Catholic boy who tried with all his heart and might to make me see my error. We skied 5 miles over to his church to see a priest he said would straighten me out, and I was truly anxious to be shown my error, if error it was. But the matter turned out differently. Coldly and scientifically, I argued with the priest, refusing to let him lead me into the inevitable non sequiturs, redundancies, and so on. And brutally holding to logic, he was reduced eventually to exclaiming, "You must believe. You have to believe." I told him that I could not believe and asked him if he were not able to help me do what I said I must. He shook his head sadly, no doubt convinced that I was determined not to understand. The effect on my friend was something he had not counted on. All the way back to the school, we skied in silence. When we got back, he said not a word and for days avoided me. I felt a secret shame for which I had no reason. Eventually, he told me that he had been forced to agree with me and had lost his faith, that he was no happier about it than I was, with my own loss of faith, was obvious. In fact, he was even more stricken. The result was to set me thinking on what I had done and whether it was right. I saw then what I believe all great religious teachers knew, but could not and did not say. The ordinary man is too weak and too helpless in the whirling vortex of life to sustain himself on his naked human willpower and his cold human reason. Only with some kind of deep belief in an all-powerful magical being of some kind can the masses of humanity maintain social and reasonably worthwhile lives. Without such a belief, they can see no reason for not immediately indulging themselves in their most animal and immediate desires. And they despair in the face of death unless they can imagine something further. As long as men are thus ignorant and weak-minded, they must have some such spiritual crutches So religion, far from being an opiate, is truly the sustainer of the masses of people. He who destroys religion before humanity has regressed far beyond its present primitive intellectual state is helping to destroy civilization. Well, George, I think I disagree, but let's go on. Since then, I have come still further along the road of understanding that realize that atheism is as bad as the rantings of a religious fanatic. The latter says, I was one of the luckiest human beings on earth and was born into the only true religion. All the rest of you are damned sinners. The atheist makes the equally conceited statement, I have examined the entire universe and everything in it, and I am certain that there is nothing I cannot know. For a rational man, I think these are both impossibly conceited and stupid conclusions. In the face of our ridiculous helplessness and microscopic nothingness in a universe of billions of light years, it is madness to assert that some kind of unknown or unknowable force does not exist, a force so foreign to all our concepts that we would be incapable of thinking in terms of him or it. It is part of the intelligent man, I believe, to recognize both his superiority to the masses who must have the fables of religion to survive the vicissitudes of life and his unspeakable inferiority to the possibilities of total intelligence. Under these circumstances, I think we must humbly renounce the right to make grandiose and positive pronouncements concerning a yet unexplored universe whose possibilities are so infinite and enormous that it will be centuries before we can reach even the nearest star in rocket ships. To those who say we have no evidence of anything on Earth, of any immaterial thing, or any power which does not appear capable eventually of being known, as the atheists do, I reply, true, but how can you be sure that such forces and power do not exist elsewhere? How can you even be sure, preposterous as it probably is, that there is not some giant being which is master of the universe and which you may never discover? I think Arian logic covers that. Having time and again stumbled through crises in the historical battle which I am now engaged, and having learned later that our accidentally discovered solution, or even what seemed like a misfortune at the time, was the only possible way we could have survived, I am convinced that there is scientific evidence of forces which are beyond our comprehension at work. Perhaps it is only the result of subconscious problem solving, and so on. But who can say? My answer is that we must be humble in such matters because the best of us is horribly, fearfully ignorant of the gigantic mysteries of the universe. I am an agnostic, which means that to all proposals and explanations of the mysteries of life and eternity, I say, quote, I do not know, and I do not believe you or any other human does either, unquote. Well, I think agnosticism and atheism are so closely entwined that it's pretty hard to separate them. That's my opinion. At the same time, I stand firmly for the positive ethical religions, whatever they may be, and believe they must be protected and given the greatest freedom to do what they can to lessen the awesome burden of human misery on this planet. But George, Tom says, they don't. They simply add misery. They don't do away with misery. They don't limit misery. They create more and more misery. So we have a little disagreement there. And I think maybe by now, if you had lived, you may come to that conclusion too. I know there will be many intellectuals who reply that religion has caused untold torture and suffering to stamp out heresy. But in view of man's need for emotional catharsis in today's immensely frustrated world, and in view of Pavlov's experiments, I believe that religion is the poor man's psychiatry, his only escape from intolerable pressures of society. Since that ski trip to the priest up in Maine, I have never tried to argue anybody out of his religion and have given strict orders in the American Nazi Party that religion is simply not permitted as a subject of discussion for anybody. I think that was a fatal mistake. Tommy says, we have Protestants, Catholics, atheists, agnostics among our membership. All of them are equally welcome and valuable. We are battling for better things in this earth and will leave discussions of religious affairs until we are in the next, if such there be, when better evidence will be at hand. At Hebron, I formed my first tiny political organization and succeeded with its purpose. There was a chemistry professor by the name of Foster, who was a petty tyrant, even sneaking about around the halls of the dorms in his stocking feet to catch boys breaking regulations so he could give them terrific huge numbers of demerits. Ed Lewis and I, a few other top-floor men from Stuyvesant Hall, organized the Five Fives, which is Greek for FF, which referred to what we felt about Professor Foster. We burned the unfortunate victim in effigy, marched about the campus with torches and signs, plagued the poor man with impudent notes, and generally made him and the administration miserable for keeping him on, and it worked. The next year, Mr. Foster sought employment elsewhere. I also had fun at Hebron in the process. There was a genuine 14-carat block-headed rube on our floor, the epitome of stupidity. It was no less sparing of the sensibilities of such good targets of fun than any other boy. But I was more clever in perfecting methods of making life miserable for some characters. A standard avocation of all at Hebron, we invited this hayseed to a super-secret meeting to see about getting rid of Foster. The rube, whom we called Danny Boone, was delighted at thus getting in with us. We discussed what could be done about Foster with dreadful mocking seriousness, and finally decided he had to be done away with. We had learned in his chemistry class, Poetic Justice, how to make nitroglycerin, and the conspirators decided thus to send Foster to his reward. In growing tension and hushed voices, we decided to draw straws to see who would carry the nitro and throw it into Foster's suite of rooms. One of the guys announced that he had made some of the deadly stuff and had it on cushions in his room. He went and filled a little vial with hair oil, and we all watched him through a crack in the door as he brought the fearful thing back on a pillow, stepping with immense caution, bulging eyes and bated breath. He set it down in the middle of the room. Covertly, we were all watching our rube out of the corners of our eyes. He was transfixed, hypnotized, helplessly in the spell of the thing. The fatal drawing of straws was held with terrific, terrifying seriousness. A strange coincidence, the boob got the short straw and stood looking at it, frozen with horror. We all congratulated him on his luck as a maker of history, patted him on the back, and told him of the praise he'd win from future generations of Hebron men, and so on. Finally, he was handed the terrible thing, inches at a time, pushed it out the door, and with it, and aimed at Foster's room. But he couldn't move. We cajoled and begged and pleaded, but he couldn't move. Finally, he appeared to have a thought. Quote, "Hold it a minute," he said, and handed the deadly vial to one of the boys. Then he dashed down the hall screaming at the top of his lungs, "Mr. Foster, Mr. Foster, they're going to blow you up," and disappeared down the back stairway. Foster came bursting out of his room and never did find out what was wrong. The corridor was quiet as a grave, and all was as it should be at Hebron. only the suffocated groans of a diabolical joy under the blankets and pillows in a dozen cots were clues of what had happened, but Mr. Foster couldn't hear those. The summer of 36 I spent lobstering in Maine, as I had for many years before, and indulging my newly found joys of philosophy and music, combined with appreciation of nature I had felt since babyhood. I also worked as a waiter at the Green Shutters, a small summer hotel in Booth Bay Harbor, frequented mostly by school teachers, and I learned some new facts about the world. I learned more about females. There was a girl named Franny, working there as a head waitress. She was 24 and 5 years older than I. She was nothing special, but she was not bad either. She was a girl. I had earned a little 1936 Ford coupe mostly by selling hand soap to garages, and with this piece of modern machinery I had doctored endlessly, and Franny and I made some further experiments in the process by which nature intended there should be more of us. Later, with the more experience, I would have had no trouble discovering and experimenting with the process itself. But with my Victorian upbringing and ideas and my utter ineptness in the matter, I allowed Franny to hold the experiments to preliminary investigations and what you might call dress rehearsals. Nevertheless, these sessions were so profound, exciting, and thoughts and images they provoked interfered seriously with my growing interest in music, art, literature, and philosophy. I found myself wondering as I read the Crito whether Socrates had had similar experiences, then remembering Xiaxtip and her reputation as a termagant, I decided that if they had shared such experiences, Socrates wasn't adept at it or had given it up too early. At the Green Shutters, I also learned about old ladies and discovered some effective methods of dealing with them. Their endless, empty chatter disgusted me. Nothing but stories of tea shops, gift shops, difficulties with other old ladies, sly remarks about still other old ladies and their friends. It was depressing to a lively youth who had just discovered the fabulously interesting world of ideas, sex, music, philosophy, and so on. How could these corseted blimps survive each other's empty conversations about nothing for years and years and years? It was a mystery to me, and still is. But there is no mystery about their dispositions. There were a few sweet ones, but these old warhorses of grammar school and high school were mostly arrogant, imperious tyrants, with us waiters and waitresses. Nothing, absolutely nothing, was quite right for them. Nothing quite satisfied them. I remember all the same kind of teachers I had had, and began to cast about in my mind for methods of innocent revenge. They would have me move their mattresses from one cottage to another through the woods when they would complain non-existent lumps, and then dismiss me imperiously with no tip. They would call me interminably from table to table to complain of small discrepancies in the portions of food or other injustices and dignities to their too dignified persons. But I discovered there was one thing that drove them crazy: sticky handles on the pancake syrup jars at breakfast. They were a finicky, odd lot, and sticky fingers was unbearable to them. So I carried a sticky rag with me and dosed it up with their doorknobs. Also on their light switches and anything else I could find where they would get into the mess. The effect was thoroughly delightful and satisfying. I was called out at all hours, of course, and the proprietress and her son were scolded no end for a mysterious plague of stickiness, but nobody could figure it out except us waiters and waitresses, and we had no interest in spoiling all the fun. There was one fat old killer whale in particular who drove us mad at the table. She was always discovering that there was air bubbles in her scoops of ice cream and insisted that the terrible deficiency be made up to her. No one evening I decided to be sure her ice cream was rich enough to suit her. I took a square of butter, which was kept in the same freezer as the ice cream, and built her a nice ball of ice cream around it. Then I served it up to her with great style. We all watched from behind a little screen looking out between the cracks and holding our breaths as she came to the butter. I was going to explain that it was an accident, that the butter must have fallen into the ice cream, which it could have, when she squawked, but she didn't squawk. Instead, we gave her look down at the dish, bend over and hack at it with her spoon at a few minutes. Then she took a large bite of the butter and almost lavishly smile spread across her face. She loved it. I was called for immediately and dutifully came to attention beside her. "Young man," she commanded, "this is the finest, richest ice cream I have ever tasted. What kind is it?" Quote, "Turner Center," I told her truthfully. "Well, I want another portion right away, and I will have some of this kind every night. See that Mrs. Clayton orders this kind in the future, not that watery stuff we've been getting." And that's the end of a reading from This Time the World. It's about George Lincoln Rockwell in his early days, in his youth, and I think you should get this book and read it, because it teaches you a lot. And you won't find it in White Power, because White Power is political and propaganda and has some good ideas, but has some bad ideas too. So, anyhow, that was for our good buddy back east somewhere who requested it. So here we go, 14:05, and I'll be back tomorrow, Wotan's Day, David Lane's favorite day. And if someone out there, more of you, want me to do a little more reading on that book or any other book, just let me know, and I'll do it. Won't guarantee that I'll mispronounce words and things like that, and I won't guarantee that you're going to agree with everything I say as I read. But that's life. Get over it.
What is the bloodlust? The bloodlust. The bloodlust. They say, all the men that I've read about, they say that the human animal is the only one that has bloodlust. Killing without purpose, killing for pleasure, you can see light through this. I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.